of the Port of Houston Authority at 9:15 a.m. We are going to call our meeting to order. So the first item on the agenda is just opening remarks. I just want to thank everybody for being here today, and also just to thank the team at Port Houston. It's working every single day, new cargo. We know Roger's going to talk a little bit about supply chain disruptions, and every time I talk to somebody, they ask me a question about why their stuff is still at Port Houston. And we'll talk about that here in a minute, but we appreciate all the hard work that everyone on our team does to move cargo, because cargo is moving. It's just a lot more of it, and that's one of the big challenges that we have today. Our last special meeting, we approved staff to move forward with the first leg of Project 11, which is the 11-mile stretch between Bolivar Roads and Redfish Island. So that's going to be a real, obviously the amazing part of the expansion, and we got it done much earlier than we thought because of all the hard work we had, not only by our staff, but also by our legislative groups and by industry helping us, so I appreciate that. With that, commissioners, any other comments that you all want to make at this point?
We took the mayor and council groups out Thursday night, and some of them out Saturday night since we were in the middle of a storm, but our crew did a great job, Captain Williams and Garrett and Maria, just an exemplary job. Everybody was very complimentary. I was telling Roger we had one participant that took some videos of activity at the port and everything, and immediately posted it on social media along with some of the facts and figures from the port that we told them about. Roger was with us Thursday night. Rich Burns was with us Saturday night, and both of them did a great job visiting and making connections with local officials. But we also have I had one of our veteran council ladies said newbies on the tour that had not been before, and that they told me that they always learn something new about the port, and it's amazing that the different perspective that a lot of our elected officials get when they actually see what's going on at the port versus just hearing about it or driving over the 610 bridge or something. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure that y'all knew what an exemplary job our staff does.
Good.
When we have these opportunities, they were phenomenal.
Great, great to hear. Any other commissioners?
Well, I've been making a lot of events lately, finally. It feels good to get out there. But I'm hearing the same thing, Steve. Get a lot of positive feedback.
Absolutely.
Staff doing a great job, and I think the commission as well as the chairman. I think we're just a great team, and it's really a lot of fun.
I just want to echo, being the newest commissioner, that I really enjoyed the state of support. And I thought the chairman did an excellent job in explaining what the port does and what the port does not do. And I was very excited, and I think the whole audience was very excited about the growth that we've experienced. So, I think it was a great job.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, let's move on then to item C1, which is the approval of the minutes from our commission meeting.
So moved.
Second. Any changes or questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Staff report, Roger.
Yes, good morning, Chairman and Commission and all of our guests, either here or virtually. Glad to have you this morning. I want to take just a little bit of time to talk about what's going on with our operations. We're very busy still here, both at our multi-purpose general cargo facilities as well as our container terminals. I'm looking out the window. It's the first time I hadn't seen a ship at that berth in about a month, but the rest of the docks are full. So still have many working ships at the Turning Basin. General cargo is up 31% this year over last year. A lot of other things, steel's up 27% before the year, for instance, but a lot of other goods, plywood, bagged goods, those things, and for Pete's sake, containers on general cargo ships are coming here as well, looking for alternatives to get into Houston with imports from Asia. So, and just to highlight steel in September, we did 337,000 tons versus 128,000 tons last September. So that's kind of a comparison of month over month. So it's really been peaking at the last part of the year. Container terminal volume, you all hear about. I'll go a little bit more about the supply chain, but our volume for the year is up 16% in TEU through the third quarter, and 11% alone in the volume that we handled through our container terminals in September alone. So, you know, you hear about the supply chain, and I think a lot of people get the impression that it's stopped. It's moving. It's moving fast. It's just a lot of demand has created challenges. Freight continues to move through Houston, and we're not immune to those challenges, but you see some of the things you read about and see on the news in different ports around the country. We have some of those challenges albeit on a lesser scale. Quite simply, demand has overwhelmed the supply chain, and as retailers continue to rebuild their depleted inventory from really unprecedented pandemic buying, when people were staying at home and buying things and not going to the restaurants and not going on vacation. But on top of that, we're in the middle of peak season as well. So tremendous demand we're seeing not only here, but everywhere in the country. So some of the challenges, and you know, just to highlight how what's happening here, like yesterday, for instance, we do have ships waiting outside. We had three ships waiting for Bayport and one ship waiting for Barber's Cut, which is minimal comparatively, but we're working those things. We've had anywhere from 1 to 12 ships in the queue for the last couple of months. So, however, we're managing that as efficiently as we can, and we're only averaging about over the last 2 weeks, an average ship waits about 60 hours at the anchor before it comes in. Now, keep in mind, it's some of them wait zero, but some of them are limited by they're being able to come up during restricted hours, is what I'm trying to say. So some of them don't come up anyway. So, but it's still 60 hours that they're currently at anchor. We've had 9 vessels. I think this is important. We've had 9 vessels that have skipped Houston since the 1st of September, and we know of 10 more that are going to skip Houston by the end of November for blank sailings. You know, the carriers are citing, you know, a schedule issue, congestion issues, and schedule recoveries that are occurring not only here but everywhere else in the country. The other thing that's a challenge that we've talked about is containers are sitting on our terminal. The dwell time of containers is kind of the crux of most of the issues. The importers are not coming and picking up their boxes because they don't have a place to take them and they don't have a means to get there. What I mean by that is average dwell time for our containers historically is 3.5 to 4 days. Over the last couple of months, it's averaged 9 days that they're sitting on our terminal. Exports, it's even worse, it's 10 days. So containers are sitting on our terminals, and that's taken up all the capability that we have as far as storage on our terminals. To quantify that a little bit, I was asked, and I think we get asked all the time, what does that really mean? So just for example, in January, on import loads only, we averaged about 22,000 TEUs on any given day sitting on our terminal. In October, we were averaging 39,000 TEUs. You know, you're talking about 75% increase in imports sitting on our container terminals at any given time. And the interesting thing is nearly half of those are more than 7 days, and more than 10% have been there more than 30 days at any given time. So they're not moving for various reasons. But in spite of that, our service levels, we've been able to mitigate those impacts to the service level, especially to the trucker, with somewhat but very minimal increases in average turn time. We do have the occasional spikes. We had a couple last week when there was a surge of exports coming. There were some spike turn times, but in general, we've been able, our staff's done a great job of trying to mitigate those impacts. Early on, labor was a challenge when this pandemic, you know, when this surge started to come, but we've improved that significantly. We, working with the ILA and the stevedores that have, that employ that labor, and, you know, we were struggling to get 12 gangs several weeks ago, and now we're getting as many as 15, 16 gangs during the week now, which is very important, which will turn these shifts faster and been a little more limited, quite honestly, on the weekend, but we're working that. You know, we're working together to do what we can to be a part of that as the port with the labor. I mean, we're all in this together to get that labor force out there to turn these ships around as quickly as possible. I'll tell you what we've done. We struggled early on in the labor running the rubber-tired gantry cranes on our terminal, you know, which was limiting our ability to serve the truck driver. And that's improved significantly. Together, we've certified an additional 26 operators in the last couple of months so that we can have the labor that we need to serve these trucks coming in and out of our port. Truckers, still limited supply. Chassis are limited supply because containers are sitting on boxes. Containers are sitting on chassis at the distribution centers instead of turning around in 2.5 days. They're turning around in 2 weeks. So it's just limited the supply and circulation of chassis as well as containers in the system. So there's a lot of things that are adding to this. There's not one single thing, but we're doing what we can. Meeting with our carriers, we've met with most of our carriers. They understand the challenges, and quite frankly, a lot of them are content with what they're doing in Houston and appreciate what we're doing to try to mitigate any of their issues here in Houston. So all this on top of it, you know, we talk about infrastructure, we've got plans to accelerate the investments in our infrastructure so that we can continue to grow and accommodate the cargo that plans to come in Houston. I believe when this is all said and done, you know, inherently our level of activity is going to go up even further because, you know, we've been growing as a diversion cargo from other ports, particularly on the West Coast, and I think that's going to continue to grow at a rapid pace after this pandemic and demand is gone. So anyway, we'll stay tuned. A lot going on. If there's any questions about the supply chain, we can talk about them. But before we do that, just a couple of highlights. We talked about new ship-to-shore cranes coming. They were supposed to be in November, I think, the last time I reported. Just like everything else, the manufacturer they're being manufactured in China. They're short on, you know, they're trying to get labor to finish our cranes. They're supposed to ship now in November, be here in mid-January, and, you know, we're anxiously awaiting the arrival of those cranes as well. So I'll keep you posted. That's going to be an event that many of you would probably like to see when that ship comes in with new ship-to-shore cranes. The last thing that I have, Chairman and Commissioners, is each year, you know, in October, I want to advise the commission as well as our community of what our plans are for tariff rate increases for the following year. And we're going to come in November at the budget meeting to seek approval for a rate increase. With our container customers, we have marine terminal services agreements with those with specified rate increases that is consistent with CPI. And this year, the CPI, the basis for that is 5.4%. So we're seeking a increase of 5.4% to our rates for containers. for non-containers, being consistent with what we do down here at the Turning Basin with our real estate and other entities that we have down here, which are basically CPS, CPI of 3%, we're the greater of, we're going to recommend a 3% increase for our non-container business at the Turning Basin. So that's what we'll be recommending. I want to give you a heads up and give our customers a heads up of what we're going to be recommending in November. The reason why we do that is they need 30 days, 30 days for approval notice before they go into effect on January the 1st. I will remind you that last year, our container marine terminal service agreements called for a 1% increase in rates. We chose not to raise our rates 1% during the pandemic, so we passed on that a year ago, so we think it's appropriate for what we're going to be recommending in November. And that's all I have. Do you have any questions?
I'd just like to say, Mr. Chairman, not to repeat what Roger said, but, you know, we did have a labor issue there right after the pandemic, but we've got plenty of labor now to handle our work. He said that we're putting out 12 gangs. The ILA is putting out 12 during the day and 12 at night.
I'm sorry.
So we're working about 3,000 people a day, just loading, unloading these ships and getting it off the terminals. Now, we ran into a problem because of the pandemic where we couldn't train the SeaCo crane operators, ship operators, for over a year. So we lost some with retirement, and but we've been able to bring in qualified, skilled ILA crane operators from Savannah and Florida who's come in to help us get through this. And so we believe that, and we've been working with the stevedores and the port itself in expediting our training for these SeaCo crane operators. We believe by the end of the year, we will have a pool, not to take care of the growth that we expect, but to get us to where we can handle what we got now.
I just want to make sure we had as many as 15 or 16 gangs last week.
Yeah, right.
So we weren't limited to 12.
But that's 24 hours a day.
Yeah, 24 hours
right.
a day. Yep.
Good work, Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other questions or comments, commissioners?
Well, we're seeing an improvement in the labor shortage as well. Folks are coming in looking for work.
Right.
We're manning the snapping the vessels, so it's getting better.
And the stipends kind of running out, too?
I wouldn't want to go there. But
can't get the free money, you got to go to work.
Well, I can tell you that other business, like my day job business, is still having major problems getting skilled people to come to work for us. We're down probably down 40% in terms of some normal vacancies. It's up 40% from normal, and it's just I think we as a country just have a serious mismatch between the jobs that are out there and the jobs that people want. Any other questions or comments? Okay, let's then move to appearances. So to start with, we only have two folks today, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, we have Gladys House of the CDC of Freedmanstown. Freedmanstown, Gladys, are you online, I take it, or are you here?
I think she must be online.
Okay, so do we know where Gladys is online on the WebEx?
No, she may be a call-in user. If you are, please press *6 to unmute yourself.
Do we have Gladys? And we have to press *6 to unmute yourself. I'll tell you what, let's give her some a chance to do that, and I'll move to our next speaker, which is Captain Keith Donahue of the U.S. Coast Guard, one of the senior members of the team that takes care of Port Houston. So, Captain, floor is yours. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairman. Thanks for being here. Thank you, Commissioners. Appreciate the time to come here. My name is Captain Keith Donahue. I'm the Deputy Sector Commander with the Coast Guard, Sector Houston Galveston. I'm here to represent Captain Jason Smith, the Sector Commander, who can't be here today. working with the port on providing safe harbor and refuge for our fishing vessel community during a time of storm. I was in the area for some of the recent storms, for Imelda and Harvey, but I was here during Ike. Last summer, there right before Laura came up through our area, I was on a small aircraft heading down towards Galveston and to see the line of deep draft heading outbound. At the same time, see a trickling in of all these fishing vessels coming up into the harbors and bays and up the ship channel. We know, from experience, they're going to come up, they're going to find places to go. And the partnership we've been working on is trying to find a place we can actually put some operational controls, put some safety measures in place. So not only help and protect them, but also make sure it's efficient and less chance of impacts to the waterways afterwards. So thanks again. I hope it was favorable on the proposal.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions or comments? Okay. Did we get Gladys House connected? Hey, found it? Okay. All right, let's have some technical issues there. Sorry about that, but if we get Gladys sometime during the meeting, I will move back into Gladys's public comments if that works. So if you find her, let me know. Okay, great. Okay, so under executive, we don't have any items. Business equity, no items. Commercial, Tom, are you going to take us through this?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Under commercial, H1 is to approve staff recommendations to award a contract to Love Advertising for media buy services for the Port Houston advertising. This is everything from business to business, community, and now business equity. H2 is to approve the 2022 membership in Greater Houston Partnership at our standard level that we are at, which gives us a seat at the board and then a number of committees that our staff belongs to. I also have one that I'm going to get after we approve the others in this group that we have to do an amendment with. So right now I would ask the commission to approve items H1 through H9, excluding H3.
Motion.
Second.
Okay, is there any questions, comments? All right, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so items 1 through 9, excluding item three passes. Can you talk about item 3?
Yes, I'd like to speak about item H3. It's a lease to Golf Winds. They already have about an 8-acre site, and they want to pick up another acre and a half-ish. And in the RCA, there was just a miscalculation on the annual rent. That's all it is, and it's going up. So it's a good story rather than a bad story. So I'm going to let Eric read the amendment so that we can vote just on that.
Yes, and I just asked for one of the commissioners to move to amend H3, which is, as Tom said, an amendment to the lease of Gulf International Inc. to reflect the annual base rent as of November 1 will equal
$436,930.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions, comments, commissioners? Hearing none, all in favor of H3 amended, say aye.
So under finance, we have one item. I'm going to let Tim Finley explain what we're doing here.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. Good to see you and welcome, staff and guests. Item I-1 on the agenda this morning is essentially asking for your approval and authorizations to proceed with revenue bond issuance of up to $400 million. Being used exclusively to fund the acceleration of the Houston Ship Channel Expansion Project, a project which will benefit all users of the Houston Ship Channel. The agenda item before you includes approval of the second supplemental resolution that specifically authorizes the sale of the bonds, as well as the distribution of the official statement. In both of those documents, and include any materials provided for the meeting. As you know, the total cost of the project based on 100% design estimates is nearly $1 billion, with the Port Authority potentially committing up to $665 million of the total, which includes $75 million for pipeline removal and relocation. Again, the issuance of the revenue bonds is planned to produce $400 million in proceeds, of which up to $50 million is reimbursement for costs we incurred on the project prior to bond issuance, engineering and design costs. That money will be used to fund continued acceleration of our container capacity. The $400 million in proceeds is forecasted to cover the majority of the Port Authority's commitment for Project 11, and the remaining funding will come from the cash generated by our operations. Additional financing may be required as early as 2023, depending on demand for facilities, et cetera, and that would be used to accomplish further accelerating the container capacity demand. So the item is before you today, and I welcome any questions or comments.
Just a note, this item was presented to the audit committee yesterday and approved by the audit committee. Go ahead.
Yeah. What was that last part you said, that if we needed additional funding in the future?
Correct. In right now, modeling, which of course could change based on demand signals, modeling indicates an additional need for financial support in the $250 to $400 million range in 2023.
Right.
Again, pending the demand on our facilities. That's right.
So where does this put us at if we need additional funding in 23 or 24 or 25?
Yeah, so as you know, it's all related. If in fact we need to continue to grow our capacity that fast, that mm-hmm. of course signals that we're generating, there's more demand on our facilities and therefore revenue associated with that demand, we could continue to cover this additional fund if needed, continue our growth and fund an additional borrowing in 2 to 3 years. Does that answer your question, Commissioner?
Yeah, I guess so. So we're already planning on having the need for additional money, the way I understand it.
Based on the demand we see today and projected to be fairly consistent in the coming years. Now, when you get into the 10-year plus timeline, right, as we look at additional potential container capacity terminals, certainly Project 12, then there will be significant amounts of financial support required at that time based on today's projections, but that's beyond the 10-year horizon today.
So one other thing, I'm assuming then that Project 11, the first stage, the port's going to fund this, looks like, because has there been any other body come to the table and say they're going to help us fund that?
Not yet. But let me make a quick point here. Okay, so this $400 million, we're going to commit $20.4 million for debt service. In the audit committee meeting yesterday, we showed for the third quarter $166 million of free cash flow that the port made for the first 9 months of the year. By the end of the year, we will have over $200 million of cash flow that the port generates just in 2021, right? So think about it this way. We got $200 million of cash that we're generating annually, and we're spending $20.4 million on this $400 million. So we have $180 million of other cash flow that continues to grow over the years. So right now the port is in an amazingly strong financial position that gives it tremendous financial flexibility in the future to issue more revenue bonds or to use existing cash flow that we're creating every single year to expand our terminals and to expand the capacity. Now we have right now, correct me if I'm wrong, we can basically double our TEU to about 7 million plus or minus if we build everything out, correct?
Yeah, we 6 million for sure, you know, however quickly we need to do.
So we have the capacity to build and to expand our position today dramatically. We have the cash flow to fund it either through debt or through just using cash flow. And then ultimately, if the and you still have the flexibility of issuing GEO bonds if in fact it makes sense to do that at the time. So I think we're in a really strong position. There's not a lot of reason. In the audit committee yesterday, we have roughly a little over $500 million in liquidity in cash, and that a lot of that's spoken for in terms of projects that we've approved. So I think just to make sure everybody understands, we are in an amazingly strong cash position and financial position for the future. So when Tim talks about perhaps needing more debt funding in 2023, we have the capacity to do that. And then in 2023, the question will be, how much cash are we generating? What does our future look like in terms of what we need to fund to expand our terminal capacity? And then we just make a decision as a commission then, do you use internally generated cash, do you borrow money using revenue bonds, or do you use GO bonds? And that's a decision. The good news is there's a lot of options, and those options will be, you know, in front of us, you know, going forward. So we're not in a position that where this is kind of the last money that we have. This is just the first installment on getting the channel, you know, built all the way up to Morgan's Point.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to make a comment. From where I see this industry going in the Port of Houston, I predict to you we're going to need additional terminals between the next 3, 4, and 5 years. It's going to explode on us, and if we're not able to handle that cargo, it's going to go somewhere else.
I agree.
And no disrespect, if you go out for GO bonds, you can't wake up one day and say, hey, we want to go out. You got to plan it way ahead of time.
Sure.
We got to keep that in mind, too.
Absolutely. We always have to look at our plans, and we're getting ready to do a budget cycle where we'll do a new 5-year plan, and we'll need to take a look at the cash flows and what we need to do in the next few months. So do we have a motion?
I just want to say real quick, sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. I know it's a lot of work. So thank you to you and the staff. I know it's a lot of sleepless nights. I also want to thank Donna McIntosh from ORC. I know a lot of times we don't see all the paperwork that gets done on these deals. I know the preliminary official statement's a lot of work, so I don't know if Jonathan, but thank you, Eric, and all the team, and Jonathan over at Bracewell, but I just want to make sure, I know Donna's here, so I wanted to say thank you. And having done it, it's a lot of work, and this is a big deal, so thank you.
I just have a quick question. I thought our commitment was $500 million. How did we get to 665?
665, again, if you break it down a bit, $500 million gets you through segment two, so all, you know, IABC two, and then 3 through 6 is shared with the Fed, or cost shared in today's scenario. So that's your five and a couple hundred million for 140-something for that and a little bit of for pipelines. So five is really not well, it's the segment one and two.
Industry I thought was funding everything above two. Is that not right? Or they were going to fund half of the whole project. So are we committing money north of Barber's Cut?
We are committing
the cost share. For the sponsored cost share. So the 35% is ours. We have gotten no commitment from industry to
pay. Well, we have.
Well, we got a commitment, but we've got no follow through.
Right.
So we have to plan moving forward that we will be paying the 35% local share.
Tim, is that?
So just saying that the project partnership agreement includes a commitment to pay our share. And so when we talk about those numbers, and that doesn't include all of the segments, but includes version of the segments. So that number reflects the paper commitment in the project partnership agreement. What's going to unfold partly is industry commitment, partly is decisions by this commission. So it's a potential commitment in terms of the dollar, it's sort of a floor based on what the project partnership agreement but as it unfolds, it will likely change based on the commitment.
Also, especially when you get the actual numbers.
The numbers in the project partnership agreement are based on feasibility.
Right. And Tim, that number includes the credit that we're getting. Remember, we advance funded this phase 1A, you know, for the federal portion so that we could get this going. That
$400 million includes paying ourselves back.
Okay, just make sure that's clear.
So when you think about, when we think about the, when I think about what we're paying, right? So we're, the Port Authority is required by virtue of our status as a non-federal sponsor. We pay for 35% of the project, except we also pay 100% of the LPP, which is the local, and the LPP is part of the, it's not part of 1A, but it's 1B, right? It's the LPP. So in that, we pay 100% of it because the feasibility study, which we all have debated a lot, said that we didn't need to do that. So we're going to expand 1A, then go keep a five, so you have 700 feet from to Redfish Island, then you'd have 530 feet, and then you expand it again, which obviously we all thought didn't make a lot of sense, and that had to do with the sort of the old rules in the modeling that the Corps uses, which we tried to get changed multiple times, and we actually spent a lot of time trying to negotiate the LPP out, but we couldn't get that. If we had to negotiate the LPP out, we would have been another year or two behind in terms of being able to start this project. So we sort of bit the bullet, if you would, on that. And that's why you had this round, this kind of big number of a billion. Industry did say multiple times in public and to politicians and others that they would pay for half of it. We have yet to figure out how to do that, and they put proposals on the table that didn't make a lot of sense to us. And so at this point, we are committed for our 35% local non-federal sponsor match, and then also 100% of the LPP cost. And that's how you get to the 665 number. And we also, by the way, have to pay 100% of certain pipeline changes, movements as opposed to core. Yeah, so that's how you get to those numbers.
The money that we're now talking about is us paying for everything. So if, in fact, these promises or these statements that have been made, never to us but to you, I guess, come forward, then that's going to change our outlook. It's going to help it.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not going to hurt it because we're biting the whole bullet here.
That's correct.
Right. And that's what we need to understand.
Right. And the good news is we have the capital to do it. Then, and we still need to continue to work with industry and press industry to deliver what they said. And that's an ongoing progress.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a comment about that. I know we got the funding to do it, mm-hmm. but is it right for the port to be responsible for everything that goes in this channel and we pay the whole bill? All of our revenue that we earn goes back into this port. And here we are going to be responsible for all of this that other people's going to benefit from, but only the port's paying for. Looks to me like.
Well, I think you're exactly right, but it is our obligation as a non-federal sponsor to do that. And we did have industry say they would help us, and hopefully they will as this project unfolds.
Yeah, but what happens if they don't?
If they don't, then we'll pay what we're required to pay.
Right.
To expand the channel.
We'll be back.
I think we're up on our worst case scenario.
Yeah, we're playing the worst case scenario we can handle. The issue is now you get into is it right?
Yeah,
well,
right.
That's a different issue.
Right.
And then there's also a potential for Harbor PA.
Yes, exactly. The proposed contribution this for Commissioner Don Carlos is remember the proposed user fee that we are still.
You know, we're going to have to be very careful that we don't make ourselves non-competitive.
I understand that. That's part of the evaluation we're continuing to do.
Plan deal.
Okay, great. Well, we'll get to you in a second. Okay, so just hold for a minute. Thank you. Okay, so absolutely. I mean, the Harbor fee was the proposal. We've elected as a commission to table that. You can't charge a fee until the channel's built anyway. So we need to deal with that once we get to that point. And then the other part of the equation will be when you think about the part that improves everybody's lives that uses the channel, it's the Bay Reach part of the channel, right? I mean, that's the most important part of the channel for everyone. Because you can have, once you get to 700 feet, you'll create a whole lot more transit, larger ships, daylight hours will be changed. There's just a whole lot of improvements that happen. So, but when you get to Once you get that done, then the next part of the channel is in a really interesting debate. So, the reason that we're getting ready to start construction on this channel today is because we spent $50 million in advance, and some people might argue that the commission was took a lot of risk on that, right? We designed the project before it was approved, and we spent our money. We didn't have to, otherwise that money would have been spent by the Corps of Engineers, had to have appropriations. It would have been another year or two to be able to get that money from the federal government. At least a year or two, maybe longer, right? And so we put our money on the line because we know how important this channel is. And then when you think about what we're doing for the Bay Ridge, we, the port, are funding the Corps of Engineers federal match because they have to go out and get appropriations. And we know what's going on with appropriations in Congress today, given everything that's going on there, right? So not only did we front the development, or the design development, we're now fronting the federal government's piece of it through the Bay Ridge part of the part of the channel. And had we not done that, you would be deep and widening this channel 2026, 2027,
right? Yeah, we've gained at least 3 years.
At least 3 years. So I think that's really important for people to understand. And obviously, we're not happy that industry didn't write a check, but we're also not letting them off the hook.
Yeah. Because they delayed us cargo for 2.5 years. So
I understand. So I just want to make sure we understand where we are. And right. Because of this financial strength and this commission's knowledge that we really needed to move that forward, we have done it without industry's support other than their support politically to get it approved. Obviously, they did help us get it approved and get the new start and all that. I don't want to take that away from industry, but we definitely need to hold their feet to the fire for the money.
Well, what I like about our strategy is that we're leading. And generally, by experience, when you lead, people will follow.
Right. Yeah.
And I just hope that happens. There's no guarantee, but I think they will. The tanker traffic pipe is going to grow more than the container traffic.
I understand. That's why they should come to the table. I agree with you, Dan.
It just makes sense for them to step up and pay their fair share.
And I'm in favor of us doing it right now for the Bay Ridge. Yeah. I don't want to miss out. I'm in favor of it.
I understand that.
Even if we have to pay it all.
There you go.
I'm in favor of the strategy that we have been following to accelerate the program and everything. I'm just concerned that I think many of us have been under the understanding that we were committing $500 million and now it's grown by a lot. And that's just my observation. I will be interesting. Let me ask this. So if the entire project is estimated to be $1 billion, which I'm afraid is going to be a little light anyway, at what point, how does 3-6 get built? How does phases 3 through 6?
Through cost share of 25% or 35% cost share by the local sponsor and the 65%.
That's what we're committing right now, right?
Yeah, we've committed to do that.
Okay, where does the other
65% is appropriation by the federal government?
So it may never get.
Well, that's an interesting point, right?
So we're just thinking that the money's going
to
be there.
We're going to build the Bay Ridge, right? We know we're going to do that. We're building the Bay Ridge, right?
All right.
We're building the Bay Ridge. Security and story, and we don't have to worry about anybody contributing capital. We're funding it. We're going to build the Bay Ridge. Once you get to 3, then it's a federal appropriation process, which means that the Corps of Engineers is going to have to go quit an OMB budget, and then happens to get approved by appropriations, so I have to appropriate money for those upper reaches. Now, at that point, if people that are operating terminals in the upper reach want it deep and widened quicker, then they need to come up with money.
And Commissioner, just to be clear, forgive me if I wasn't. Again, 1 and 2, effectively the Bay Reach is a $500 million prospect. This 400 is what we need to support that. So the 400 pays effectively for that Bay Ridge remainder. That other 100 will come from our cash and operation.
It's just pledged and not spent right now until
that's
the additional
things
comes through to do 3 through 6.
That's correct, for 3 through 6.
So I want to make sure people understand that. So we'll have to make a decision when we get to number 336 as to what the port wants to do and how, and then how that gets funded over time. If once you start in that federal process, it could take a long time to fund 336. And that will be a decision that we, along with industry, will have to make. And, it, and the only way to accelerate it is to get additional capital for industry, or from industry.
Okay.
All right. So with that said, yes, go ahead.
Given that we're embarking on this first phase, can the federal process get started prior to, or can it not get started? Should we complete one and two?
The federal. Go ahead. Rich,
it's underway now.
There's
conversations involving the bipartisan infrastructure bill, the annual work programs, and appropriations for construction programs. The Corps asks, and they say these are the projects we need to work on. The decision is made by OMB. And so your guess is as good as mine as to how Washington is working these days. But that process is underway right now. We're working with our consultants in Washington, D.C., our design engineers, our team, Charlie and Lori downstairs, are, you know, every day they're losing sleep working on these issues.
Okay. Well, we had discussion before we had a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Any other discussion? Okay, great. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Maybe we should start playing the lottery.
Playing the lottery? I think we ought to just start keep moving cargo.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Okay, where are we now?
It's your bank.
Oh, yeah. We have the speaker. Yes, we're going to go ahead and Gladys House or for the CDC of Freedomstown. Are you with us now, Gladys? Your turn. It locks her in. Remember what we do, star 9?
Star 6.
Okay, can you hear me now? Oh, okay.
There you go. Perfect.
Okay. Peace to everyone. I am just calling to express concern, commissioners, about the community grant program. And the practices and policies and how unfair it appears to me with the selection process. And our nonprofit, the Community Development Corporation of Freedomstown, over in the Freedomstown, Fourth Ward area of Houston, we are right at Buffalo Bayou. And I know that the Port Houston is located just where it is, but still, we have concerns about flooding too, and we submitted our proposal with much difficulty because no one was ever available to answer any questions we had with some issues in the proposal policy, and it was just really chaotic, and we just got nowhere. We still submitted our proposal. And we're just concerned that one sector of Houston got the lion's share, we got zero. And I'm just curious as to whether or not you all are gonna change your policy to be more inclusive of all of the communities, the disadvantaged communities that may have very good ideas on flooding prevention or preparedness in the very near future.
Well, I appreciate your comments, and we actually have a community community relations committee meeting right after this meeting, and so we will definitely bring that up, make sure that staff understands your concerns and hopefully improve. We definitely want our community grant program to reach all communities, and needs to be inclusive. We all understand that. It's one of our, you know, key goals in providing this program, and so hopefully we can improve that so you don't have problems in the future. So thank you for your input, though.
All right.
Where is your group located?
I'm sorry, what is the question?
Okay, you're in Freedmanstown.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're just west of downtown Houston, and I noticed, I was told by the Port Houston representative when we first applied that the focus was right in near to communities immediately in the Port Houston area, you know, like surrounding the port. And I said, wow, okay. But still, you know, we went ahead and submitted it. So I'm glad you all are going to have a meeting about this so that it can, the Port of Houston can address all communities, not just those in the east end of Houston right there at the port.
All communities throughout the region. I agree.
Yep. Well, we'll definitely have a discussion about it in our meeting immediately following this meeting. If you'd like to attend, you can sit in and
we'll address
you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, commissioners.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Roger, do you have the figures on how many applications we had, how many we granted, what the dollar figures, anything like that? I don't know.
Yes, we had 63 applicants. The ask was up to $2.5 million. We awarded 12 out of 63 in the amount of $300,000, 12% of what was asked, you know, that was, you know, allocated when we went out for the grants program. And so it's a very competitive process, needless to say, but it certainly reached many areas up and down the channel.
Did it go all the way to Galveston up to 52 miles? Or was it just located in the request out of Houston?
It didn't go to Galveston.
Did it go outside of Houston?
Yes. Harris County.
And we've got a lot of cities that sat outside this city that are inundated every day with traffic, smog, noise, all kinds of problems. Not downtown Houston. Yet we seem to be spending more of our money over here. I say let's just be fair. Let's run some surveys and find out and put that money up and down that channel where it belongs instead of putting it in one hole.
We can talk about that in the next meeting. That'd be great. Let's move. Any other comments or questions, commissioners? If not, we'll move on to infrastructure. Tom?
Infrastructure. J1 is to approve staff recommendation to award a contract to Orion Construction for the removal of abandoned subsurface pipelines that lie within the future limits of Project 11. These are all previously owned by defunct and bankrupt companies. That's why we are paying the full share of this. We could not find the companies aren't around. The bankruptcy system has already run its course, and so we're kind of stuck.
Is this the Orion that sued the port?
No. They're part of a bigger umbrella, but this is the group that just did Care Terminal for us, did the fender system, and did a great job. This is the construction arm, not their dredging arm.
Are these pipelines that have been abandoned completely?
Yes.
Is anything in the pipeline?
No.
So basically, all we have to do is just remove the pipeline, right? Not have to lower it.
No, yeah, this is removed. This is removed.
Probably
were
in the way
anyhow.
Yeah.
So we can't really find out who owned them or if they're even in business anymore. Is that the problem?
Well, we know who owned them, but they're not in business anymore.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah,
we can't.
So they're all bankrupt or whatever.
But we know the pipeline is not being used.
Right.
Yeah. Let's just take it out. Yep. It's cheaper than lowering it.
Just to clarify, many of these pipelines.
If you're going to speak, you need to be seen.
Many of these pipelines went underneath the ship channel, and they were removed for Project 10. So this is kind of like the stubs on the side that are left. So they're not operable. There's no company that's taking responsibility for them.
Are we going to take them out all the way, or just for Project 11 have to do it again in Project 12?
No, we've asked that question, and it's being taken out to the limits.
Okay. So well, that is not an issue. Problem. Hmm.
That would grab the bottle. They're just on the sides where we're going to be widening, so we just need to take the stuffs out.
Good. Right. Cheaper than normal.
Need a motion on that?
No, J2 is to approve staff recommendation to award a contract to ResCom for the Turning Basin annual concrete replacement projects. These are for the small, call kind of jobs. So we get a patchwork that needs to be done on the terminal. This is the contract that was previously given, and we allowed the contractor to cancel it because they were they did not have the equipment to do it, so we had to rebid it. This is a 1.7 because we're going for 2 years since we didn't get we're behind on 21, so we are catching up. That's why it's 1.7. J3 is to amend the professional engineering and auditing services contract with Atkins North America. This is supporting Project 11. This company is the one that does the peer reviews for the design and procurement packages, and this dollar figure should take us through 2025. I ask the commission to approve items J1 through J8.
Motion.
Second.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, all in favor of J1 through J8, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, next.
Operations K2 is to approve staff recommendations to award a contract to Yard Mule Specialist Texas for the purchase of 16 Tier 4 diesel yard tractors. These purchases are part of a grant that we received from SPRI, which is Seaport and Rail Yard Areas Emission Reduction Program. It's a mouthful. We'll take out 16 of our current older yard tractors and replace them with Tier 4 engines. This will be a 93% reduction in NOx and an 85% reduction in particulate matter from what we were using to what these new engines will have. This is in the grant, it's specified that these had to be diesel engines. So we still look every time we purchase for buying electric when possible. But in this case, with this grant, the diesel was a requirement. K4 is to approve staff recommendation to award the 3-year contract to Waste Corporation of Texas to provide trash disposal and recycling for all of PHA terminals and buildings. Just to give you an idea of recycling, in 2020, we don't have the final numbers obviously for 2021, but in 2020, we recycled about 75,000 tons of materials. That's everything from concrete to scrap metal, to aluminum, everything that you can think about. So I ask the commission to approve items K1 through K6.
So moved.
Okay, any questions or discussion? I have one quick question on the Tier 4 yard mules. So are they making electric yard mules yet?
Yes. They are. Right now, these run about 130,000 per. The electric ones are above 500.
About 500,000.
Correct.
And we have one now.
We have one now.
Been on a pilot project that we're continuing to use and test or whatever. But in the future, maybe as that develops, those opportunities come. But again, those grants weren't available for electric ones.
So we're getting $1 million grant on this.
Correct.
Total. Yeah.
Total. So if you went to the $500,000 one, number one, you don't get the grant. And number two, you pay four times the most.
You get two.
And the grant specified that it had to be diesel, but
the grant ain't the federal government.
Yes. So going forward, I would assume we're going to see more and more opportunities for grants for electric replacing, diesel with electric. But that's not what.
And Tier 4 is the best diesel engine you can buy today.
That's correct.
Okay.
Can
they be retrofitted to burn LNG?
Probably not economically, but I think moving forward, electric is probably going to be the way of the future.
Okay. You know, I think this is a challenge you have in all this trying to reduce emissions
or hydrogen.
Is the you know, the sort of cost differential and then also federal grant differential. You know, just to, we're working hard, and I want to applaud our management team, Rich's team, for doing, for getting very, very clean, dredging contract. I think, Roger, would you, and Rich, would you say it's that what we did on Project 11, which when we think about the speed at which we're trying to get this done, we delayed Project 11 by 3 months so we could be one of the cleanest diesel engine dredging projects in America, correct?
Absolutely. We exceeded even the expectations of the environmental and community advocates who wanted us to at least match Tier 2. We were 48% better than Tier 3 on that project. The SPRI, which is a Texas Environmental Quality Commission grant, not a federal grant, those are adding to NOx reductions. We've got other things in the works that are going to continue to add to NOx reductions and particulate reductions. So it's a portfolio of projects that are going to continue to chip away at the air quality issues in the area that we can control.
Okay, great. Any other questions or comments?
Good work.
Good.
Absolutely. Okay, great. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, items K1 through 6 pass then. L?
Under people, we asked to authorize the renewal of our stop loss insurance coverage with Aetna Life Insurance for the 2022 self-funded group medical benefit program for active employees and retirees not eligible for Medicare at that point of their retirement. This is the excess insurance we have to cover any individual claim that's over $175,000 and the aggregate of all claims that reach 120% of Aetna's projected claim level. L2 is to authorize the renewal of the third party administration services with Aetna Life Insurance for the 2022 self-funded group medical benefits program for active employees and retirees not eligible for Medicare at the point of retirement. This is, they handle all of the transactions in terms of paying the doctors and the hospitals, and we just pay them a fee of what comes to about $5 per employee per month. So I ask the commission to approve items L1 and L2.
So moved.
Second. Questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
I don't believe we took up general. Did we take up number 7? Did we skip it?
We dropped from the final agenda.
Yeah.
It was dropped.
It was dropped. We didn't have one.
Okay.
Okay.
PSEO, M1 is to approve the proportional purchase via the City of League City of a computer-aided dispatch system to Motorola Solutions. We joined League City's CAD, if you will, dispatch system back in 2015. They're updating and upgrading the system, and this is our share of the multi-entity program. M2 is the annual agreement with the Houston Ship Channel Security District for membership fees. And M3 is what we heard earlier. It's to approve the MOA between the Port of Houston Authority and the U.S. Coast Guard Sector Houston Galveston concerning the safe harbor for fishing vessels during storm events. I ask the commission to approve items M1 through M3.
So moved.
Back. Questions, comments? Okay, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And under technology, we have one item. It's for to award a contract for the 3-year purchase for the Microsoft corporate licensing and subscriptions. Like everybody else, we have to pay per license, and we just get a corporate rate. We do it through the state of Texas because they're co-op. That's what the SHI Government Solutions is part of the the Texas DIR because they have the best rate because they also use Microsoft. So I ask the commission to approve item N1.
Motion.
Second.
Any questions, comments? All favors say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we are now going to go into executive session. So, Eric.
Now 10:20 a.m.
Everybody's closed.
Texas will not be in a closed meeting submitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code by the Consultation Committee deliberate regarding real estate, including the disposition of Bayport Terminal vicinity properties, economic development negotiations or incentives, and employment evaluation of public employees and security-related matters. Work Commission will reconvene public session.
We are now at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, October 22nd or 26th, and we're going to open the Port Commission of the Port Authority, Port of Houston Authority, back to session. And we don't have anything coming out of executive session that needs to be voted on.
Move to adjourn.
Second. Okay. So
second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Next meeting is November 18th. It's our budget workshop.